Action Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon, and thanks so much for tuning in to Nation Radio. 2 hours of talk about the Edmonton Oilers, the prospects, the future, the past, and of course NHL news, and there's lots to talk about. Are these Stanley Cup playoffs the most exciting in a while? The Philadelphia-Pittsburgh series alone, that is crazy hockey. And then, of course, most of Canada is really enjoying that Vancouver Canucks-Los Angeles Kings series. We'll talk about that as well throughout the afternoon. Now, we've got some great guests lined up for you today. Gabe Desjardins from Behind the Net will join us. We'll talk about the Jets season, the Oilers, and their chances next year. This terrific playoff, which has boggled the mind. And we'll talk about some scouting and some advanced stats as well. So join us for that later on in the show. Julia Vaillant will join us as well. Help us understand the season past in Montreal, what Serge Savard means. I have my own opinions. I remember Savard as a GM. Great hockey player. Came in as GM, and the team had great success and really drafted from the Quebec League mostly. That was during the time when they would, you know, pluck Patrick Waugh in the third or fourth round, and he'd end up being a Hall of Famer. Had great success there. And now he's back in as an advisor and at a higher level of management. And one wonders if he's maybe lost touch. We know he's done it in the past. We know it's not, you know, signing Rajan Houle again. But we'll talk to Julie about that and more. Corey Graham, voice of the Edmonton Oil Kings, will talk about what's been an incredible run for a gifted young team. And these layoffs are incredible. Like, they play four games in three nights, it seems like. And then they have to wait for the next team to get going. So they're playing Friday against Moose Jaw. We'll talk about Corey and ask him about if he's been paying attention to these Stanley Cup playoffs that are so interesting. Tom Lynn as well will be by. Player, advisor, agent, attorney, certified by the National Hockey League Players Association. He's acted as a general manager in the past with the Minnesota Wild and assistant GM with them as well. We'll talk playoffs, the draft, other subjects. And yes, had a lot of people email me, including Speeds and Wood Guy and some other guys, Steve Smith, asking about Justin Schultz and why he's not eligible for the draft, but is eligible to become a free agent. So we'll talk about that and more as the day rolls by. So what a week for the Edmonton Oilers. Winning the lottery is a huge gift, and the Oilers have a great chance to add what will be four now outstanding young forwards, Hall, Eberle, the Nuge, and one imagines Neil Yakupov. And there were some press conferences this week. We'll talk about that as well. Steve Tambellini and then Jason Greger on this show will be rolling the actual tape before 2 o'clock today, but we'll bring it up several times because I think it's central to the Edmonton Oilers and their offseason. Neil Yakupov is the consensus number one overall pick, and Oilers fans should expect a very gifted player, somewhat similar to Taylor Hall. He's a right winger, shoots left, comes off the wing. He's got a lot of pluck, too. He's a gritty guy, and he gets in your face a little bit. Gabriel Desjardins, who's one of our guests today, has a system called NHL Equivalencies, and it suggests that Neil will come in at around 18 goals, 40 points, 20, somewhere in there, based on his most recent junior season. So that's really similar to what the expectations were for Taylor Hall, who I think was at a 46-point NHL equivalency number. So looks like a good player, and we'll ask Corey a little bit about the progress of these young defensemen in the Western Hockey League. That's where I thought the Oilers would go before winning the lottery, but at this point one imagines that young Russian in the OHL is just too good to be true, and adding another player up front who's that dynamic has to be attractive to the Oilers. It's really manna from heaven. If you're Steve Tambellini, Stu McGregor, and the scouting staff, there's no downside to this, and delivering another elite talent to the NHL, extremely likely. I can't see them going another direction unless somebody overwhelms them. Now, there were press conferences from Steve Tambellini and a conversation Jason Greger had with Kevin Lowe this week, in which Tambellini said, you know what, we're open for business. We're not going to shop the pick sort of thing, but if somebody comes to us, we'd be interested in that. We have to look at some other areas. And Stu McGregor had said, you know, all things being equal, maybe this draft will be a draft where we address some weakness as opposed to going for BPA. But Kevin Lowe was on with Jason Greger yesterday, and he said basically we'd have to be overwhelmed. The Oilers would have to be overwhelmed in order to move that pick, which makes sense based based on the dialogue we've had with everybody and the conversations that people have had about Yakupov and the fact that he's such an outstanding young hockey player. No word on Coach Tom Rennie. That was discussed as well. The Oilers, I think, are going to have a very interesting offseason. There was a rumor today, or not a rumor, but Eric Francis had an article up today about Sutter and coaching the World Hockey Championship team and what that might mean to the Edmonton Oilers, maybe an open audition for the head coaching job. So that looks like something that that we can look forward to as well. So a very busy show, jam-packed, all kinds of things happening, and there's a few NHL games that are on this afternoon, and we'll talk about that as well. Joined first right now by Tom Lynn, a player advisor, agent, and attorney certified by the NHL Players Association. Tom, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, glad to be here.
Now, I have had more questions about your particular segment than I've had in quite some time, and most of it revolves around Justin Schultz. He's caused quite a stir, hasn't signed in Anaheim yet.
Right.
What are the odds that he's just finishing school and will sign with the Ducks anyway, or is that the way this works? Is there something up?
Well, you know, it reminds me of the Blake Wheeler situation. Happened similarly out of Phoenix, where he waited out and he ended up signing with Boston. And similar to that, they also went into total radio silence, he and his advisor, during that period. It was funny because Wheeler was from Minnesota, and we called him, you know, once the time was up for him to be free, we called him a couple times, but he seemed to have a direction already in mind. He signed with Boston before I could finish the answer machine. So sometimes players have a specific thing in mind, and that's where they want to go. Other times, and it's very possible that he wants to test the market or see what's out there and still signs with Anaheim. In other words, when you can only talk to one team, it's difficult to gauge where you fit in and everything else. But, you know, you've got to keep in mind, too, a lot of these guys want to make the NHL. They believe they'll make their money over time, but they don't want to end up, say, like Shea Genoway in Minnesota, you know, being a top college guy and then being in the minors the whole next year. He probably wants opportunity.
So can you explain the mechanism that allows Justin Schultz to go UFA instead of re-entering the draft? Has that changed, the verbal changed in the CBA?
Well, it's always been there in different forms since 1995, but basically the deal is when a guy is 18, 19, or 20, he can be drafted. So once you get beyond 20, if you've gone through the draft or you've been drafted and waited out your time and didn't sign, then you're free. What you have with guys going to college, they often play a Tier 2 junior for a year or two, then go to college, so they get beyond the age to be drafted. So this provision in the CBA kind of matches the drafted guys like Schultz up with those guys, saying, all right, you've been in college for a few years, or you played junior. If you want to be free, like the other people who are drafted, you only get 2 years to sign them. If you want to be like them, then you got to give your team notice that you're leaving school, and they have a certain amount of time to sign you. So it's really just matching those guys up with the regularly drafted guys. It's not a special right in, per se.
Okay, so is there a special section of the CBA that quotes that? Is there something you can guide us to? Because there's been a lot of discussion on the blogosphere about this, and everybody's like, I don't see it, I can't find it.
Is there... Well, let's see, because I don't have it in front of me.
That's
it's
okay.
Eligibility is governed by Articles 8 and 9 as far as entry-level contracts and who can sign.
Okay.
So you would see it there. I'm sorry I don't have my pocket one with me, but I left my briefcase in the car.
It's right in front of me. I'm going to read the entire thing. No, I'm not. I'm just teasing.
Go ahead.
There are no added items. Like, this isn't a contract where Boston can go and offer, like, an extra year or an extra bonus. This is a typical entry-level contract, and in the CBA, it's covered what the maximum can be for any team, correct?
You're correct. And with a player of that caliber, I mean, even players down to the fourth round now are getting basically the cap on the guaranteed portion of the salary. So if he chooses Anaheim or somewhere else, it'll most likely be based on his opportunity or his views of his opportunity.
Let's change gears a little bit talk a little bit about the scouting staff for NHL teams. It's a busy time for amateur scouts. How close are they? Will they be now to their final list? I know they're not slotting in the final list, but individual
right.
scouts would probably have their areas pretty much covered, and they'd have their guys that they're really strong on, right?
You know, that's a good point. Regionally, those guys should be on top of their players. Playoffs can ratchet guys up and down. In other words, you shouldn't be inserting a guy on your list now or taking him off the top because you saw three playoff games. But if you have a guy 7, he might work his way up to 5 or down to 11, that type of thing, whether he's in junior playoffs. The college and high school seasons here in the U.S. are over. So the only time you'd change a guy there is if you saw him play, you know, in a tournament. But the region guys should be done. The key now, especially approaching the draft combine, is for teams' senior staff to combine those lists into something they can work from. In other words, how do you judge, number six on the list had 14 goals for a high school team in northern Minnesota. Number five on their list had 40 goals for a BCHL team. And then number three on the list had 3 goals for a tier two Finnish Elite League team. That's where the comparison comes in.
Well, and it's got to be difficult, too. As if, for instance, Philip Forsberg is playing in the Swedish One League, which is one below the Swedish Elite League, but he's playing against men. That's got to be a difficult thing, because if you're not familiar, and obviously these scouts are and the scouting directors would be, but it must be very difficult to project that player to another level based on what you're seeing.
You know, that's a fun one, and you touched on one of my great distinctions in the game. When I was with the Wild, I saw this a lot. There's two worlds to scouting. Pro scouting is a science. Amateur scouting is an art. And I said that over and over again. Pro scouting, for the most part, especially in the NHL, we have reams of statistics. We can do extended plus-minus. We can see who matched up with who. Even in the AHL, you have a large swath of statistics, and it's a level playing field. But I remember showing, when was Koivu drafted? Mikko back in 04 or 03. We showed him video to the coaches the night before the draft saying, oh, this is the guy we want. And they looked at this gangly 17-year-old kid skating around with no points, and they said, he's going to be our top pick? So it's an art. Those guys, it's an art. You can't compare scientifically what happens around the world. We scout from Alaska, when you think about it, where the two colleges are, all the way around the world to far Siberia. So basically about 7/8 of the world has hockey players going around a certain strip, and how to compare those is definitely not within the realm of my comprehension right now.
A team like the Edmonton Oilers had probably planned on picking second or third, based on history. Now they end up at first. They might have been looking at two defensemen in the WHL, Murray and Griffin Reinhardt here, as
right.
Possibles. Now you've got a whole different dimension, and you've got to turn it on a dime. Yakupov is the consensus number one player, and yet Edmonton mm-hmm. has gone to the well three times with Eberle, Hall, and Nugent Hopkins, and come up really good in terms of forwards.
Right.
At some point in time, are scouts just like, it's a laydown, we got to take Yakupov, or would there be somebody possibly in the room fighting for the defenseman based on need?
Well, you don't see a lot of the top five picks in play since Mad Mike's machinations at the 2000 draft.
Yeah. It was legendary.
So that, and unfairly so, because, Brian Burke did well with the Sedins just before that, and Chris Pronger before that. But it seems to put the kibosh, before guys will trade a top pick or move at all, they're thinking, is this going to be the defining mark of my career? If you get beyond that, it's one of those good problems. When like a team has a quarterback controversy, they say, oh, you've got a problem with the quarterbacks. And the GM coach can say, well, we've got two good ones. In Edmonton's case, if they were third or fourth, they might have a more obvious pick. Now they don't, but they can either, take the higher pick or possibly get one of those two guys they originally targeted and have an additional asset. So it's a good problem to have.
So at this point, the draft is a big deal, but also there's college free agents being signed as well, and that's
right.
That's a big deal too, because some of these kids have not been drafted, so it's open season. Does that take up a lot of the scouting time, or is that more a GM assistant GM job?
Well, you got us on another good question there. That is a tough one. That was my bailiwick when I was with the Wild, and a few teams really focused on the college free agent market, others not at all. I think since a number of guys came to the fore as college free agents in the last 7 or 8 seasons, all teams have an aspect of it, but some have a guy like Dave McNabb in Anaheim who almost exclusively travels, seeking that out, and a few teams devote staffs to it. Other ones just have a guy ask the amateur scouts at the end of the year, when you're watching amateurs, did you see any good college free agents?
Right.
So the measurement is tough. The crapshoot there is these guys are older,
mm-hmm.
and instead of seeing an 18-year-old with a certain skills you expect to develop by, age 23, you're looking at usually a 21 to 24-year-old, and then saying, how much more is he going to develop? Often we sign guys. I signed Travis Roach out of University of North Dakota. He's from Whitecourt, Alberta. I signed him about 47 minutes after he gave up the winning goal in NCAA overtime to Chris Kalanos. And we had high hopes for him. Good kid, a lot of skills, but just wasn't going to be an NHLer. It's really hard to tell at that age.
And I remember reading in the book Hockey Town where Jim Devolano had talked to his owner about college free agents, and the owner, Mr. Ilitch, said, well, how many good ones are there? And he said 10, and Ilitch said, sign all of them. So it seems like it's a little bit of a wide-open area. There's talent there, but it's high-risk, high-reward.
That's a good point, because we did an analysis, I remember, back in 08 of the teams that had success with college free agents. And for the most part, it wasn't about scouting, it was about money. In other words, Anaheim had devoted at the time a lot of money into signing these guys, almost $2 million a year at one point before the new caps came into place. So you make a good point. If you sign 6 to 8 per year, after 4 years, a few people take notice and say, well, you have good scouts, whereas some other teams, you know, weren't signing as many. Given the current climate, though, I got to tell you, it's not the market it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
In other words, if a guy has slipped through, like a Shea Ganaway last year in North Dakota, it's either because he was injured during his draft years and you didn't know him, or he had a growth issue or something else. I mean, there just isn't that classic Curtis Glenn Cross who played in Alaska for 2 years and kind of came to the fore as a junior after sophomore year and was signed. Not as many of them anymore.
So, and then let's talk a little bit about your role. Now, you're obviously interested in certain players and your job as an agent, but do you follow your players closely in the playoffs, or do you watch as a fan? Are you able to draw a line in the sand somewhere where you're just watching hockey to enjoy it, like the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia series? As a fan, I'd love that. If I had a client in it, I might not. It's pretty dangerous out there.
It is. I mean, and in setting up last year, as a new agent, it focused really on Minnesota amateurs and collegians. I only have a couple guys on the pros, but even watching the NHL and AHL playoffs that are coming up and some of the college ones, it's difficult for me. In management, it was fairly straightforward, how you watched the game, what it meant, what you're going to do afterwards. As an agent, you're watching things even like a coach you like more, players you like more, players you don't like more. It's more of an emotional watching instead of the cold science of management. It's fun in a way. I haven't enjoyed watching hockey this much in a while. I was just watching the Minnesota Advance 16s and 17s this weekend, the top players in the state. And it's fun. I used to come to think these things, write down a few notes and leave. It was all scientific, and now it's fun to watch hockey. So that's a good side of it.
One final one. I really appreciate this, Tom. This is outstanding information. We appreciate your time. NHL trades come to fruition often at the trade deadline and also at the draft. And I've heard this question asked many times, but I'd like your input on it. A trade that's made on the draft floor could be 6 months old, or the discussion might be 6 months old. How often is there a trade made where it's, and I'm talking about not just like 36 and 47 for 25, how often is a trade made where actual players are exchanged that not a lot of discussion goes on? Are these trades that take 6 months to a year to flesh out?
Well, it's never 6 months to a year, but I think there are two kinds of trades that happen at the last minute. One is one generated internally where the GM finally comes around to it. I'll give you an example. We did the first trade by BlackBerry when we traded a fourth rounder for Todd White on the draft floor way back when. And me and a pro scout had agitated for 2 months, and my boss, Doug Rasbrook, kept saying, no, don't want to hear it. And then a couple things didn't work out with him the day before the draft and everything going, and I brought it up again, and he said, we'll do it. And I said, well, we got about 37 seconds left. So we did it by BlackBerry. The other way it happens is when another team generates it.
Yeah.
In other words, you would trade Peter Smith for a third-round pick, but no one's brought it up. You get that call, and boom, it happens quickly, even though it wasn't considered, but the other team kind of generated it.
Okay, sounds good. Tom, thanks so much. We're going to have you on again. That was excellent.
Great. Take care, guys.
All right. That's Tom Lynn. Interesting discussion and such a great background. That's why we're thrilled to have him on. A player advisor, agent, attorney, certified by the NHLPA, has been a GM, a GM as well, worked in the American Hockey League with the Houston Aeros, and as you can tell, great insight there. I hope the questions were answered suitably. That Schultz question has been hanging around for a while, how he's eligible to sign as a free agent but not eligible for the for the draft. I think it has something to do with age, but nobody can seem to find it in the CBA. And as you know, it's such an easy document to read. So anyway, my thanks very much to Tom Lynn. That was a very enjoyable interview, and we appreciate his time. Okay, this is Nation Radio. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:24. This is Nation Radio. Stories about the Oilers, past, present, and future, and major NHL stories throughout the week. Connor, you've never been to Oodle Noodle?
No.
I hate to call you out like this, but come on, man.
I'm sheltered. I've got my staples. That's about it.
Of the two of us, I'm not the hep cat. You are. You got to be out there, represent.
I want to.
I'm Connor from Nation Radio. Bring me something.
Exactly.
I'm telling
wink, wink, if they're listening.
If you walked in there, Totally. You'd get something, you know, you'd pay for it and everything.
They might recognize me if I paid for it and ordered.
Have you been watching the playoffs? Are you enjoying
it? Yeah. How good was Claude Giroux last night?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Can we trade the first overall pick for him?
You know, it Philadelphia Flyers are a strange organization because they always seem to get these kids out of Quebec. Gagné was another one, but going way back. And Giroux is like a freak of nature. He's so good, you know? And I mean, Couturier was good too, but I mean, the line was rolling with him. And then somebody tweeted this morning, and it was so funny. They said, yes, here's Pittsburgh's problem. Don't score three goals in the first period. But it's a great series, and
Can you stop? Just Sydney, slow down a bit.
Oh,
score in the last minute, not the first.
That's great hockey. It's a darn shame it's not the final, because that's how good it is. No doubt about that. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about the Edmonton Oilers here. And Steve Tambellini had a media conference, and Jason Gregor talked to Kevin Lowe this week. And I thought they were interesting because really about the first overall pick, but there's more in the conversation that you'll hear from Mr. Tambellini here about what the Oilers are thinking with regard to that first pick. It sounded from the interview, what I got out of it, the one you're about to hear from Mr. Tambellini, that the Oilers were thinking about trading the pick, or at least, you know, they were open to deals. And then Jason Gregor's interview with Kevin Lowe suggested that they'd have to be overwhelmed. So with that as a precursor of the interview, here's Steve Tambellini earlier in the week.
Afternoon, everybody. Well, I know we've got lots to talk about. The season going forward. Let's start with some questions. Jonesy, I know you have some questions.
Who are you picking?
No. Yeah.
No, just what's it been like since you hopped on the plane? I mean, I'm sure you got a million calls and messages and stuff.
It was, my BlackBerry did light up quickly. Expect the unexpected, I guess. Things changed dramatically in 24 hours, no question about that. That was the last thing that I really felt was going to happen, that we were going to win the lottery. But having said that, you know, if you're going to go there, you might as well win the thing. But it presents options. It presents a lot of options to us. You get to be in control of the top part of the draft. You're able to listen to other teams' ideas of moving up or moving down. I'm excited. I've been thinking about this for a lot of hours now. But it just presents, I think, a wonderful opportunity with this time in the Oilers' history where we're accumulating some elite, talented players that we know we're going to add another significant piece or package when we leave the draft.
You're already getting calls from other GMs that are just sounding you out at all, or are they mostly just people congratulating you?
There was a couple of them that congratulated me a couple times last night. So it'll be interesting. Everyone has their own pressure points and things like that of how they're trying to get better. And the top end of the draft is always exciting because there's probably, you know, a few people, different positions, but that could be viewed upon as the top two or three kids in the draft. Right now, Yakupov is by many critiqued as being the number one player in the draft at this point, but that's not always the case.
What was the atmosphere like in that room? Because we all saw Burks, like everyone's been talking about the look on his face. What was it just like to be there?
It's the usual kind of discussion and catch up with the managers that do show up for that. But you know what? When you get down to the moment when Bill Daly walks over, it is pretty intense. You're hoping somehow that you can find a way. I guess if you have the number one pick, you want to keep it for sure. And you get lucky enough in some spot, like I'm sure Toronto and Montreal and the Islanders were hoping that they could somehow move up too. But yeah, it was a great gift.
Will it be more difficult this year to make a decision between leveraging this into a package or choosing a player?
Maybe, John. I think, like I said yesterday to a few of the people that I spoke with, that, you know, the phase I think that we're just coming into presents us with more of comfort, I think, that we can listen to legitimate options. We've accumulated a good amount of high-end skill throughout our organization. A lot of it, most of it's not here yet, but it allows us to think about, you know, if you move down a pick, if you move down three picks, of adding a solid player and maybe a current player. I don't know. I just feel more comfortable knowing that our stable is more accomplished than what it was a few years ago. You know, I'm looking at our roster inside there today of our Oak City roster and seeing all the guys that I'm not sure when they're going to play in the NHL, but there's a lot of them that will. And that's a good feeling to know that it's starting to come as far as that depth that are going to play for the Oilers.
Steve, there's a theory out there that a lot of people subscribe to, that you shouldn't draft a defenseman high, that you should get your defenseman through trade or free agency, and that because they take long. Where do you fit it? Where do you view that theory?
Well, I'm really open right now, and I'm leaving tomorrow night to meet Stu McGregor at the Under 18 World Championships. And I know we're going to go through our top end of our list here. I think we're in a spot here where, you know, if the talent is equitable, you're not taking an A player for a B player. But if you believe that the potential is similar and the talent and the characters are similar, that we're in a spot where we can discuss by position at this point, you know. Yes, we have some very high-profile, talented young people playing forward for us on the Oilers right now. But we also have four very talented, maybe five, young defensemen that are not have not turned pro yet that are coming. So we know that that is coming also. So, but I think overall your question is, would I be interested in looking at something like that? Yes. I think right now that we have the option to have some flexibility, and we've achieved that over the last couple of years.
If this was a draft where clearly an Ovechkin or a Malkin was there, or a Stamkos, somebody who was clearly yes. better than everybody else, would you even be considering it? Yakupov is the best player in this draft.
Right.
But he's not spoken of in the same terms as those people.
I agree with you, Matty. Not at this point. There'll probably be a couple of players that end up being stars in the National Hockey League. There always is coming out of the top of the draft. But at this point, there isn't the player that people are, you know, talking about Sid Crosby or, you know, Alexander Ovechkin. They haven't had that type of impact in the game up to this point. But having said that, you know that the top end of the draft are going to have impact on a lot of NHL markets. You know that they're going to be great players. Who knows what they're going to end up, but at this point, no.
No organization necessarily wants to draft first overall three straight years, but that's potentially the scenario. I mean, do you look
at it? Well, we weren't supposed to this year.
You don't want to be in that kind of scenario. But having said that, you got, you know, what looks like two great ones already, and maybe a third one. Can you discuss having that first pick and turning three guys into, you know, who knows what quite quickly?
Well, when you're speaking of attaining a player at that point in the draft, you know that quality is there. So adding that level of player to your organization, regardless if he plays next year or the year after that, you know that you're adding a significant piece, whether it's through just the single player or a package that you entertain to possibly also complete. So you know that this is another significant piece for the organization and getting better. And everything's pointing to our organization that things are getting better. That's a good sign.
Yakupov and Grigorenko, obviously both Russian players. I mean, you had success with Burry and Vancouver when you were there, but do you intimidate at all, given the state of affairs with Russian hockey at times? What happened with Radulov to draft the Russian?
I'm aware of it, but I'm not going to let that taint my or skew my opinion. I think most importantly, you have to understand the person and understand what makes them tick, why the person has had success, what are his priorities in life. You know, is the National Hockey League his ultimate goal? is that winning the Stanley Cup is ultimate goal. I said when I spoke to Taylor Hall and got to know him that when you listen to him as a young man that hasn't played a game in the National Hockey League, he told me he was the first pick. He was very comfortable talking about that. So a first-round pick, a first pick overall, playing in a Canadian market, has to have special qualities, the maturity, the confidence, the I'll do whatever it takes to be that player. I'm not worried about being that player. And the same thing happened with Ryan Nugent Hopkins in a different way. His poise came through that he was not fazed by anything when you spoke to him. And you all speak to him, and he's a humble, thoughtful young man that is confident beyond his years, but in a great way. You know, so he exudes leadership. And that's what you have to find out. You know, you have to find out these players, whether they come from Russia, from Sweden, from the U.S., from Canada, really what makes them tick.
So if you talk to Jakub Robin, he doesn't come across that way yet. He has the talent that he does. So that make it the decision easier as far as going with him or not?
It's an important piece of the puzzle, of the formula that for us, from where we are right now as Oilers, you have to demonstrate over time, whether it's through interviewing or watching play or talking to people, that they have the perseverance and the courage, aside from all the talent that they're blessed with, to be able to be a number one pick and play for the Edmonton Oilers. It's not just about today how you are, but how are you going to be in this uniform, in this city, 10 years from now? Maybe that's maybe even the most important question.
So the next 2 months, considering Jakub Hopkins isn't playing, or his team's out young, yeah, I'm just going to spend learning who he is?
I think you do. I think you have to know where he comes from, what his family background is like, what his coaches think of him, what his teammates think of him. How does he react to this type of scrutiny? How does he react on the international stage? We've seen that before in the under-18. It's the same with every player that you go through at this level of drafting. Stu McGregor has done a wonderful job as far as the depth of knowledge, and the book that he presents to me at the end of the day is extensive. We'll know these players, their options inside and out by the time we get there.
You talk about entering the new phase, whether it's you've got a ton of options and you could do a million different things. Are you heading into the different phase in a position where you have less appetite to be patient? You know, in past years it's been all about getting more picks for Stu. Now are you, you know, maybe moving some of those picks, maybe, you know, looking at can a guy come in and help my team right now? I mean, is that more of what you're looking for, or in the past couple of years maybe it's just been about assembling the cupboards?
Yeah, good question, because I think we're just starting to enter that phase. And like I said, I feel more comfortable if I did have an option where I could accomplish both, where I'm getting a solid pick and I'm also getting someone to help our current club. I mean, I have to strongly look at that, because we're starting, you know, you listen to the comments of some of the players in their postseason meetings, and I think it was Taylor Hall talking about, okay, people are talking about, you know, the young kids, we got this, we're good, but I want to win. You know, I want to show that we can win in the city now. I don't want to wait any longer. So that takes courage. That takes leadership to stand up and say that as a player. You want players that want to be accountable, that are not afraid of this. We've seen signs of a type of hockey that we haven't seen here for some time, of the type of hockey, a level of skill that's out there. So you've seen the potential that we haven't seen for some time. And I like that. I like the fact that he's not afraid to talk about that.
As a manager, I'm not sure.
That's Steve Tambellini and his media conference earlier in the week. Very interesting stuff in regard to, well, the first overall pick mostly, but now Yakupov is the area we want to talk about. This is a kid who, in 2 years in the Ontario Hockey League, just blew it out of the water. 107 games, 170 points, 80 goals. He scored 31 goals, 38 assists, 69 points this year in 42 games and a plus 15. Had a short playoff, and there was some discussion about, you know, how effective he was during the playoffs. But he's ranked number one by pretty much everyone. Bob McKenzie had him number one at the midseason rankings. And Grant McCagg from TSN, he writes the bios on all these kids. And this is what he wrote on strengths for Yakupov. Unbelievable skill level in every facet of his game. Quick feet, tremendous burst, top-notch agility, slick hands, dangerous shot, quick release. Plays bigger than he is. And by the way, he's 5'11", 190 right now, and obviously room to grow. Plays bigger than he is, not afraid to get his nose dirty and take a hit to make the play. Already plays a North American style, should have little trouble adapting to the NHL game. Very competitive. And that is in line with what we heard about comparisons to Taylor Hall. Similar type player, maybe more of a shooter, good speed, and you know, has a little bit of that physical element. Taylor Hall does as well, and it's, you know, we've talked about whether or not that's good for Taylor Hall's long-term health, but this kid is somewhat similar. In terms of weakness, Mr. McCagg writes, lack of size will prevent him from playing a rugged style in the NHL every shift, tries to do too much with the puck, and he could use line mates more at times. His NHL upside has been called a mini Ovechkin, will make you pay the price with a big hit, but doesn't pack the same wallop as Ovechkin does due to lack of size, dynamic skill set, and definitely enough to be a first-line NHL player. So that's the kind of player they're looking at number one. It was interesting when Steve Tamolini talked about being open for business, or you know, definitely going to be listening to other offers from other NHL teams, and the other GMs were congratulating him, and you get the feeling that they're more open than they have been in the past, which makes sense. Now, that's a good thing, because you obviously want to have the, you know, the conversation. But when this team was building, and the rebuild, you know, some call it 2.0 or 3.0, began in 2010 with the Taylor Hall draft, this was a team that needed assets and needed time, and they got their number one center with the Nuge, they got their skill guy with Hall. Eberle turned out to be, you know, manna from heaven. The guy's incredible. So you've got those three guys, and now you have an opportunity to add Yakupov, but you also have the defense that is a problem, and you're not necessarily sold on Dubnyk as a goaltender. So there are other areas of need, and perhaps that's something that they look at. But as we'll find out next hour, we're going to play an interview that Jason Gregor had with Kevin Lowe. As Steve Tamblini said, this is a guy they're definitely look at. They want to do their due diligence. But, you know, going into the process, he's number one. And that's pretty much where, you know, we were the last 2 years. And the Edmonton Oilers are unlikely to trade that pick, I believe, unless they're overwhelmed. And that would include somebody who, I guess, a young defenseman, and in the first 3 years of his contract and his entry-level deal, already playing at the NHL level. I don't know that anybody's going to offer Ekman-Larsson, as part of the package from Phoenix to get the number one overall pick. But if they did, it's something you would think about. So that's what I got out of the conversation. He also, during the interview, talked about Tom Rennie and the fact that he's gone for a couple of weeks and they will talk. A lot of things on the internet today. Eric Francis wrote an article about Sutter coaching World Hockey Championships, and obviously Kevin Lowe involved there. So that seems to be a fluid situation. We'll follow that. And he did also talk about Ryan Smith. And it looks like, reading the tea leaves, an offer was made of a 2-year deal, and there's been no real conversation since then. So there's probably some pressures being put to bear and some conversations being had, but they really haven't revisited that in the last little while. It was an interesting interview. If you want to go on the Oilers website and catch the entire interview, there's some great stuff on there, and you want to check it out. Now, it's 12:43. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:49. We're around until 2 o'clock today on Nation Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. Some NHL action on the way later on. As a matter of fact, in about 10 minutes or so, I believe one of the games is happening. Boston Bruins got a 1-0 win in game number one against Washington on a Chris Kelly goal. They play in game number two at 5 o'clock today. It's Ottawa Rangers, 5:30 San Jose St. Louis, and 8 o'clock Chicago and Phoenix. And it's too bad, because these are all really good series, but I don't know anybody who's not looking forward to tomorrow when Pittsburgh and Philadelphia play again. And, of course, there's that dandy Vancouver-LA Kings. You know, I've never thought ever that the Los Angeles Kings might end up being Canada's team. But the way it's going on Twitter right now, you'd have a hard time claiming anything other than that. It's been a bizarre year, and we've just, what, like 3 or 4 days of the Stanley Cup Finals? Can hardly wait. This is a great hockey right now. The first round is always the best one because there's so many different games going on, and you're sure to catch a really, really good one. Now, wanted to talk a little bit about the implications of Nail Yakupov coming to the Edmonton Oilers as the first overall pick. Let's assume for a minute that happens. The Oilers would instantly be a little heavy on the wing compared to center. Right now at center, you can assume that they have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Sam Gagner, Sean Horkoff, Eric Bélanger, and Anton Lander bubbling under, but chances are he'll be on the team next year. Now, there's also a chance they'll go with 8 defensemen, so we're talking about 13 forwards in that case. So there's a bunch of kids like Pajarvi and Hartikainen who might be on the outside looking in. There's also the Smith contract. Leonard Petrell may or may not be signed, so there's a lot of things in play. One of the things that I think could happen, should Yakupov be selected number one overall, is a trade that involves Sam Gagner. We've talked about this before, and I'm certainly not in favor of it. I really think the kid is a really good young player. But at some point, you have to trade value to get value in return, and this team will be pretty top-heavy at forward without having a good young defenseman to anchor that. If you remember the Edmonton Oilers of the glory years, they had great forwards, but they also had Coffey and Lowe and Huddy and a lot of young guns on the blue line as well, on top of Moog and Fuhrer. So if we're using that as the template, and let's use that as opposed to Chicago or Pittsburgh or any of the others, what we've got here is a situation where there's four potentially outstanding young forwards growing together in that cluster. Gagner could be a part of that, but he does have value, and he could be exchanged for a defenseman who can grow with this group as well. If Nuge and Gagner and Horkoff and Bélanger and Lander are the centers right now, that means the wingers, including Yakupov, might be Hall, Eberle, Yakupov, Hemsky, Smith, Jones, Petrell, Pajarvi, Hartikainen. So I think there's a chance that Taylor Hall gets moved to center. Just saying it out loud. I'm not the first person to mention it. From my purview, Jason Greger mentioned it. Dennis King, who's a frequent poster at various blogs and does a lot of work at MC79 Hockey, he mentioned it as well. So this isn't my idea. In fact, it was mentioned a couple of years ago, but even coming around again, others have mentioned it. But it makes sense from the point of view of building up the middle. You've got the Nuge and you've got Taylor Hall at center. And this may or may not mean he gets hit less or suffers fewer injuries. I'm not sure on that point. But you're strong up the middle, and then you've got Yakupov and Eberle. You've got Hemsky. You've got Smith. You've got Hartikainen. You've got Pajarvi. All of these other kids. And maybe they're more complementary players than Hall and Yakupov for the most part. But then again, you're stronger up the middle. So Taylor Hall would be centering, let's say, Eberle and Hartikainen or Pajarvi. So you don't need to have the strong trio. You can have a strong duo and then interchange the left winger depending upon who's hot, who's not, and who you're mad at, right? That's what that's what coaches do. They have a tendency to wean you off the time. If you're not playing well, if you're performing well, then you're back on the top line. I think it makes a lot of sense. Now, it's not been mentioned by the Edmonton Oilers in years. Tom Rennie, during Hall's rookie year, had him play at center a little bit, and it hasn't been mentioned at all. But just thinking out loud and blue-skying things in the summertime, well, in the wintertime that's supposed to be springtime, it seems to me that at least it's an idea to consider Taylor Hall at center ice. And maybe we should consider these kids in pairs, too. By that, I mean Yakupov might end up being a really good right winger for the Nuge, and maybe Eberle and Hall play together. Maybe they end up being in pairs like Gretzky to Curry, Messier to Anderson. Now, Messier and Anderson had all kinds of wingers through the years. Most famously, I think, Craig Simpson, but they definitely had guys come up and down. Willie Lindstrom played on that line. Same with Gretzky and Curry. They had sometimes Dave Semenko skating on left wing just, you know, for a few shifts, but he'd end up scoring a few goals. They had Kent Nielsen came in 1 year. Remember that? So that's the kind of thing that maybe the Edmonton Oilers can look at. It opens up a lot of possibilities, and it allows you to trade somebody who has value but maybe isn't integral to the future moving forward, although I'm a big fan of Sam Gagner, and I'd hate to see him leave. So among the things that we're going to talk about over the next few weeks and months are the draft, and then if they do take Nail Yakupov, and I think they will, then we also have to talk about what they're going to do for that blue line, because as much as we talk about how the future is so bright up front on In goal, we're looking at a 38-year-old goaltender who is a free agent at the end of next year, and Devan Dubnyk, who I think has played well but hasn't solidified his role as the number one guy. Tom Rennie said that in his postseason interview. He was very, very fair, I thought, but he also made the point like he'd like to see it for longer, and you can understand that. So there's maybe a hole there, possibly. And then on the blue line, I think we're all really hoping that Ryan Whitney is going to be able to play at the level we saw when he first got here. But as an organization, you have to hedge your bets a little bit at least. And so you're looking at, you know, Jeff Petrie and Schultz and Smead, and they're looking great. But along with the fourth guy you want to add already, aside from Whitney, maybe you have to add another player too. And maybe that means that that you offload a Theo Pekham, or you work on Sutton maybe being the seventh defenseman. But somewhere in there, in the equation, has to be a conversation about adding one or two NHL defensemen this summer if they're going to make a real run for it. And I get a sense that there's a little more urgency. I hope there is. This year, this summer, and so that if you're signing a free agent, it's not maybe a long shot free agent who might come through. You're maybe trading for somebody who you're absolutely certain can come in and play a significant top four role, power play, even strength, penalty kill against the other team's best opposition. I think that's what the Edmonton Oilers might be looking at this summer, and I think Sam Gagner might be a candidate to end up being that player sent away. All right, we're going to take a break. In the next hour, we'll talk to Gabriel Desjardins about the Edmonton Oilers, about the Winnipeg Jets, about the playoffs. Wow, they are looking good. We'll ask him about L.A. and how well the Kings are playing and if they can do the upset. It looks like they can right now, up 2-0. And we'll also talk to Corey Graham about those amazing Edmonton Oil Kings. I think it's 19 in a row that they won now. We'll talk to Corey about that in the next hour as well. Take a break. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1 o'clock. This is Nation Radio. We're here for the next hour talking about the Edmonton Oil Kings with Corey Graham. We'll replay an interview Jason Greger had with Kevin Lowe. And we begin this hour with our friend Gabriel Desjardins from Behind the Net. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Where are you and what's the weather like?
Where am I? I am in Sonoma, California, and the weather is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, same here. No, it's
same here, yeah.
No, it's snowing, actually. It's kind of grungy. It's not. Spring will be here by August. I'm not worried about it. Let's start with the playoffs.
Oh,
these are wild playoffs. What's your opinion? Let's start with the LA-Vancouver series. What's your opinion of that series, and how is LA doing this?
Well, you know, LA is a team, if you look at it, it's a team that's been built over the last 2 years by picking up players who are very good possession players, players who played really tough competition, and, you know, not necessarily focusing on, you know, the shooting percentages and the save percentages. You know, it's a team where they got a league-average goalie making less than a league-average salary, and he's you know, really stood on his head this year. And it's just a lot of good bets that they've placed. And they built a possession team, not necessarily one that appeared to score a lot during the course of the year, but one that ultimately is going to beat a team like Vancouver, I think, that is a little bit weaker on the percentages, but did better on goal scoring.
You know, you mentioned about bets. I remember in the summertime talking to somebody on this show about, they traded Ryan Smith, but they signed Simon Gagner, and it seemed like another really solid bet. Not all of these worked out, but I guess if you make a good bet often enough, you're going to end up having enough at the end of the year to maybe make an impact.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, you have to, you know, you only have, 20 bets you can make on your team. It's not like you go to Vegas and you can make 1,000 bets and win in the long run, you know. Even if you make the right bets, they're not going to appear to turn out some significant portion of the time. So, you know, you got to roll a little bit of luck and, you know, you got to, you know, stick to your plan for long enough that, you know, the possession numbers go in your direction.
Let's head to the other coast in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. That's a fascinating series. To me, it's very exciting. It's very physical and involves three goals for Pittsburgh early and then Philadelphia coming back to beat them. Tell me the story there. What's your opinion of what's going on? Is it just bad goaltending, bad positioning, or luck?
Well, I think it's bad refereeing, isn't it?
Well, there's a lot of that too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough when you got Daniel Briere standing offside, who scores a goal to change the flow of the game. I mean, I looked over the shooting numbers so far in that series, and Pittsburgh, you know, really has been in the lead. There's only a minor difference between, the level of talent in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. So, you know, that series was always a coin toss. And I think, you know, the outcome of the last two games has also been a coin toss. Although Pittsburgh has had the percentage numbers, you know, but they haven't had the goals.
So if we're in Vegas, not that we would ever bet, but we're in Vegas and we're talking about it, we're looking at the tote board and the odds, and one of us has to bet on either Vancouver or Pittsburgh coming back, the smart money would be on Pittsburgh coming back in this series.
Yeah, I think that Pittsburgh is much more likely to win that series than Vancouver at this point. I actually think that Los Angeles, you know, things didn't look that good for them until about game 60 or 65, but I think that they're a stronger team percentage-wise than Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are pretty evenly matched. So the more likely comeback is the Penguins.
Let's talk about New Jersey, Florida. I saw the game last night, and it looked to me as though New Jersey had periods of time when they had the game well in hand. Florida obviously came back. How do you feel about that series?
I mean, you know, my take is that Florida is the worst team to make the playoffs in 15 years.
Okay.
It was a really bad Montreal Canadiens team in 97 that made it. I think that every other team in the league would be absolutely overjoyed to draw Florida in the first round. And, you know, I think New Jersey probably outshot them almost 2-1. So the fact that they scored a couple of goals and that it appeared to be close on the scoreboard is an illusion. I think this one is a four-game sweep for New Jersey. And, you know, interestingly enough, the first time that New Jersey is going to make it out of the first round in many years.
Yeah, that's true. You tweeted today, and I loved it. It was with regard to comparing Florida's chances of winning the Stanley Cup and the Oilers. Care to tell me a little bit more about that? How do you perceive the Oilers' chances?
I put the Oilers' chances about zero, and that's roughly where I put Florida's. So, you know, if you wanted to bet with me, I mean, I'd give you the same odds for Florida.
So Florida's a team now that has added a lot of expensive free agents. They've obviously done a lot of drafting. What do you think of Talon's style of building? Do you think it can work, or is it a work in progress? Where is he now with the Panthers?
I think that, you know, he's got a team that's probably the 20th best in the NHL. Had he not added all those players, they probably would have been 24th or 25th. He paid too much for them. And what really happened, you know, Florida was not as bad a team last year as they appeared to be, and they're not quite as good a team this year as they appeared to be. You know, there really wasn't all that significant a change in their underlying performance, but you know, I think that they did a lot better in 1- and 2-goal games, and you know they ended up with a lot more points, a lot more games that went to overtime. So they picked up a lot of Bettman points there, and I think that's sort of the nobody thinks that really negative goal differential means they're a good team, but some people might be confused by the point total, and I think that you know Florida has pretty much They're not a playoff team at this point, so it's a long road to make it into a good one.
In conversation with Gabriel Desjardins from Behind the Net, we had a chance to watch you and read you talking about the Jets this season. How did you feel about their year? How do you grade their season?
Well, I mean, I think you know at the highest level, they put up four more points than Atlanta did last year, so. You know, I think that people looked at it as a successful season largely because they won a lot of games at home. Mm-hmm. You know, you can kind of forget about what happened on the road, but every time people went to the game, the result was good. But you know, an 84-point season is it's grounds for firing Ron Wilson. It's you know grounds for people being really angry at Brian Burke. So, you know. The Jets are going to get a pass for a couple of years. And, you know, I really said that, you know, in Winnipeg, you had to put down a 5-year deposit on season tickets. And, you know, I said that was a really good idea because it's going to take 5 years before this team is legitimately competitive.
So can you explain to me, and I mean, I've looked into it a little bit, but can you explain the home road splits, it's line matching, all of those things? What was the big reason why they were so good at home and aside from luck, and so poor on the road?
Oh, you mean so I can't use luck since it's the primary explanation?
Well, I know it is the primary, but did he line match at home? Did he do some things better at home because he could?
I don't, you know, I've gone and I've looked through this, and I don't see significant home road impacts just on the basis of line matching outside of what you would expect. You know, I mean, basically everybody except for, you know, Pat Quinn does good line matching, so there isn't much of an advantage to be had. You know, the one of the more interesting things, Detroit actually had a better home road split than the Jets did this year.
Right.
But last year they were epically bad in terms of, they actually had a negative home road split, I believe. So, you know, nothing really changed in Detroit personnel wise. So, you know, I'm really hesitant to think that you know, there's any likelihood of the Jets repeating this home road split. And in fact, you know, historically, teams, there's a negative correlation year to year on home road splits. So teams that are good 1 year are more likely to be bad the next year than good.
Let's talk a little bit about the Oilers before we let you go. Their season was, a slight improvement over the previous year, and it looks as though they're going to go into the draft thinking Yakupov, but maybe making a trade. Can you tell me, forwards are better draft bets than defensemen and goaltenders, but how wide is the gap? Like, the expectation for a defenseman taken in the top three is that he'll develop a little slower and possibly not deliver offensively like you'd expect him to. I'll use Bouwmeester as an example, but there's Cam Barker and others. How much better a bet would it be for them to take a guy like Nal Yakupov instead of a Ryan Murray?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, you know, the way that I usually evaluate picks is I look at, you know, the translation of offensive performance from junior from Europe into the NHL. And from that perspective, you know, you're really looking for, you know, significant offensive skill back there. I don't know that we've come to a point where we can really evaluate you know, a player's defensive upside. You know, and if you look at, like, you know, Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, I mean, there's, you know, fantastic defensive performance, you know, literally two of the best defensemen in the world. And, you know, neither one of them, I mean, it's a first and a second round pick. Neither one of them is going to go top three. So I think that there's a lot of difficulty in projecting upside for defensemen, whereas it's a lot simpler to figure it out on the forward side. And I mean, honestly, if Edmonton ends up with a good player, you know, with a good forward, they can deal from strength at forward. And, well, you would hope that they would be able to deal from strength at forward and get a good defenseman. I mean, the level of faith I think that Edmonton fans probably have in their management team at this point is minimal.
It's a moving target. Would time on ice benefit? And I ask that because I talked to Tom Awad once about defensive defensemen, and at the NHL level, he said you can always evaluate a good defensive defenseman based on, over a period of years, his time on ice at even strength and on the penalty kill compared to the rest of the defenseman on his team. If we had time on ice broken down like that for the junior leagues, as for instance, would that be a huge benefit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be fantastic. I think if we could recreate the statistics that we have in the NHL, so if we just knew head-to-head who was on the ice at all times and knew who was on the ice when shots were taken, you know, you'd have a much better way of evaluating defensemen and junior, because you don't have that now, right? I think that, you know, evaluating defensemen and junior involves a lot of looking at power play points and a lot of what you'd call saw him good. And beyond that, I don't think that that people have really got the scouting down. So, yeah, just you know, take the NHL stat system and just drop it into junior, and I think you get a, you know, a significant benefit on the scouting side.
Excellent stuff. So if I don't want to put you on the spot, but if we were in Vegas right now, I would have bought you a beer and I'd be saying, hey, can you help me here? Who should I put my Stanley Cup winning money on? Who would you pick right now to win the entire thing?
Well, you know, my preseason pick was Chicago over Washington. So I'm not still betting on that. You know, I'm not much of an oracle here, but you know, I think the Rangers are a really solid team, and I think they have, you know, possibly a slightly easier road to the cup than you know, than, well, definitely than Vancouver and St. Louis are going to have. So, you know, if you had to put money on something, I think New York's the place to go.
Gabriel, thanks so much for this. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
Okay, good talking to you as well. Behind the Net, Gabriel Desjardins, check him out. I could talk to him all day about 700 different things. He is the guy who came up with NHL equivalencies, which you may be familiar with. A lot of talk about that over the years, about how they really give you an idea, and he mentioned it a little bit about the equivalencies and how you can really tell forwards from junior. That's one of the areas that we can kind of measure, although it's not an exact science. The NHL equivalency from Gabe, though, is it's really accurate. It really is over a period of years, and he's done a fine job there and on many other things as well. He's the guy behind the Net. Most of the places you go and read about advanced stats will reference or draw from either Vic Ferrari or Gabriel Desjardins, or sometimes Tyler Dello as well. So legendary guy in the world of online blogosphere advanced stats, Gabriel Desjardins, and it's great to talk to him about all kinds of things. Interesting insight into the Los Angeles Kings and the Pittsburgh Penguins in those series, and we appreciate his time. It was very enjoyable. And we've got Corey Graham on the way and an interview Jason Greger did with Kevin Lowe as well, so stay tuned. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:20. We're coming up to 2 o'clock, and Jungle Jim Hunter will be on the radio between 2 and 4. And then it's my very good friend Jeff Grischel between 4 and 5 o'clock today. Edmonton Oil Kings are off again. You know, it's funny because this is a team that starts a series and then wins 4 games and then takes a week off. This is the this is the most relaxed playoff schedule I've ever seen in my life. And the problem is they just keep winning. I mean, it's not a problem, but there are long layoffs, and that can impact. The other thing that's impacting is a lot of these kids are playing really, really well, but they're nowhere near the top of the scoring race. Curtis Lazar leads the team with 10 points, 4 goals, 6 assists in 8 games, and a plus 6. We'll talk about that and more with our very good friend Corey Graham. How are you, man?
Pretty good, Alan. How are you?
Good. You must enjoy it. Like, are you just sleeping in, you know, getting the Z's, everything like that, or what?
You know, just, yeah, enjoying the day off here. It's been a long stretch of a road trip, and then back here and have a couple days off before we get going again.
So they breezed through the first round, then the second round. Have they been pushed at all yet, or are they just playing slightly better than the opposition?
I'll be honest. I think, you know, that first round, it was probably tighter than the 4 games, you know, than the series set. I thought that first round was pretty tight. The second round, it seemed like it was a little bit less competitive, I guess. I think they took care of Brandon fairly easily. And
are they 19 or 20 wins in a row now?
19 now. So 11 and 8. So, yeah, it's been a heck of a run.
And they really are, like, is it just a matter of they're much deeper than a year ago, and it almost doesn't matter who's on? Why are they such trouble for the opposition right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, offensively they're much deeper. They can roll 4 lines and pretty much more consistently than anybody else in the league. They have great goaltending with Lauren Brossoit, and, you know, their defense is one of the best cores in the league, led by Mark Pesek. I mean, right now they're deep on all areas or all aspects of the game, and they're getting good contributions from everyone.
And they start, is it Friday against Moose Jaw?
Yeah, Friday. So another big layoff between games.
Give me a scouting report on the Warriors. I know they're good, and I know they have some veteran hands, but what can you tell us about the Warriors, and what can you tell listeners who are going to be going to these games, what they can look forward to?
Well, the Warriors, big, very physical defensively. You know, they have Dylan McIlrath on the back end, 10th round pick of the New York Rangers a couple years ago, or 10th overall pick with the New York Rangers a couple years ago. Kendall McFaul, obviously Morgan Riley's coming back for this series, so that's huge for them. He's ranked 5th by Central. So, you know, defensively, them and Edmonton, I think, are the two best defenses in the Eastern Conference. So I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. Obviously, up front, they're deep as well. They have Quinton Howden, of course, Team Canada star in the World Juniors last couple of years, is their offensive player. They picked up a pair of 20-year-olds in Cam Braze and James Henry out of Vancouver, and two real leadership guys that have come in there and done a real nice job. So, you know, I think this series is going to be absolutely fantastic head-to-head. I think these two teams have been kind of 1-2 all year long in the Eastern Conference, have played great games against each other during the season, and I think this is going to be a tight and very entertaining affair.
Does it seem weird for the Moose Jaw Warriors to be in the playoffs and the crushed can not to be a part of it?
Yeah, I guess so. Although I'll be honest with you, after going to the Crush Can a couple of times last year, I'm really looking forward to going back to Mosaic Place. That place is absolutely awesome. And, you know, the Crush Can, for as cool as it was for what it was, they have a brand new state-of-the-art place out there. And it's one of the best rinks in the league. And I can't wait to get back there.
So with regard to the playoffs, they start on Friday, then they play on Sunday as well, right?
Yeah, Friday, Sunday at Rexall Place, and they hit the road for, I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday in Moose Jaw.
Tell me, what do you know about Riley? I know he hasn't played much, but this is a kid who is, you know, Central Scouting says he's right up there. Is he more of an offensive defenseman?
Yeah, I mean, he's a rushing defenseman. He's got great speed and moves the puck very well. He's also pretty good defensively, but he's definitely a guy you have to worry about offensively. You know, watching him last year, and then he played the first game. The Oil Kings played Moose Jaw and was there the first couple of games, actually, and was pretty good. I thought, you know, him and Griffin Reinhart went head-to-head in one of Riley's last games before he got hurt, and it was fun to watch them kind of play in the same game against each other, and they were both kind of trying to one-up each other, it looked like. And I think Griff had two goals that game to lead the Oil Kings to a 2-1 victory, and it was a tight game. But watching Morgan Riley, he's a lot of fun, and it'll be interesting to see because, like you said, he's only played 18 games this year because of that knee injury. But he's been skating hard the last couple of weeks, or even months, actually, and says he's 100% ready to go. So, obviously, a huge boost for them, but we'll see. You know, obviously, getting into game shape is a little bit different than practicing.
It's going to be interesting at the draft. The Oilers now having the first overall pick, and I think a lot of us, myself included, felt they would be looking at the Western League for a defenseman. Now, obviously, with number one, that could be Yakupov going first overall. But what I'm hearing, Corey, is that the late breaker, as it were, Griffin Reinhart, he's really added some edge to his game, and he's becoming more authoritative as far as every game is concerned, impacting physically and being effective moving the puck. Is that what you're hearing as well? This is a guy who's moving up the charts?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think scouts are really starting to appreciate Griffin's full game, and like you're right, playing more physical, moving the puck quicker, and just sort of raised his level, Alan, throughout the year. He's just become kind of that much better game in and game out and playing very much more consistent. You know, he's had a couple of injuries earlier this year that kind of got him off track, but now he's been back and playing consistently. Him and he's paired with Ashton Sautner, and that's been a real nice pairing for the Oil Kings. I think they move the puck well, and obviously the Griff's defensive abilities and Sautner's kind of smooth skating, get the puck out of the zone. They've been trouble for other teams, and Griff's been great these playoffs. He's just been outstanding. Hasn't put up great offensive numbers, but he's just been physical and defensively. He's been a standout so far.
Gernot scored two goals in the same game the other night. Has his game come along as well as the playoffs have continued?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we talked about it earlier how he kind of got off to a bit of a slow start, but his game has just kind of risen. It was almost like Martin just kind of had to figure out what the intensity level was like at playoff time, you know, obviously kind of going through the Western League season and then getting ready for playoffs where he's a lot more physical, and maybe took him a couple of games to sort of get used to that. Now that he is, he's been great. He's been using that long reach and breaking up rushes the other way and obviously, you know, getting involved offensively. Probably could have scored three or four that other game when he had those two goals. I mean, he had tons of opportunities. So, you know, I really like the way he sort of rounded his game to the next level. He's been able to absorb some hits and gave out his own physical punishment as well. So he's kind of he's definitely upped his level of play during these playoffs.
The other day, Stu McGregor was talking about various Oiler prospects, and he hit upon Christian Pelce and went on at length about how much he loves the kid's game. He thought he was a good young player, but you never know, and he called him a little ball of hate and loves his touch. This is a guy who really, I mean, he was drafted by the Oilers as a depth defense. I can't remember what round it was, but probably sixth or seventh, and he really has come on and made himself a big part of this team.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, Christians has found his goal-scoring touch. I mean, a kid, we all know he can fly and absolutely fly. He's probably one of the fastest guys in the league and, you know, likes to shoot the puck, scored a couple goals. Game two against Brandon from the top of the slot where he just rifled it top shelf and really propelled the Oil Kings to a victory that night. And, you know, he's been great on the penalty kill all year long with his speed, and now that he's shooting the puck, and he's so hard to handle, Alan. And, you know, I look at the Oilers, they got to sign him by June the 1st here. So, I mean, if they don't, which would shock me, there's a bunch of teams that I know are lined up waiting to see if he becomes available once again, because I know a lot of other pro team scouts keep asking me about the statuses of his contract with the Oilers and, you know what's going to happen with him if he doesn't sign. So this is a kid that I think, you know, for a seventh-round draft pick, and you know, obviously those guys don't always work out, but here's a guy that could have a potential of, you know, a solid pro career, be it at the AHL level or, you know, who knows what happens once you get that far.
And the Oilers do have a little bit of a difficulty with that 50-man list. I know Brandon Davidson is eligible to sign, and so they've got some decisions, some tough decisions to make here before the deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they got a few guys coming out, and you kind of look at all their draft picks they've accumulated as of late. They're going to have some tough decisions with a lot of good young prospects, and I guess, you know, you kind of move some guys on at the pro level and bring younger guys into your organization, but that's sort of all part of this rebuild, right? You got to keep stocking the cupboards, and they've done that. Now they've got to find room in all the cupboards to cram everything in.
Yeah, and they've got another guy on the Oil Kings that I keep hearing about, and he's very impressive physically, Henrik Samuelsson. He's got to be on all NHL teams' radar, but certainly the Oilers, just because of the style of play he has.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. You know, it kind of surprised me that Henrik is ranked just 75th by Central at the end of the season. I thought he'd be a higher-ranked player, but you know, you're right. You look at the size he has, the way he plays, and, you know, he's got a bit of that mean streak in him as well, where you really don't want to get him too upset at you because he might come at you pretty hard, and obviously can shoot the puck well, puts himself in great positions. He's playing with Curtis Lazar and Stefan Legault, which become the Oil Kings' best line here in the playoffs. Like, he's kind of the prototypical power forward. Like, can play any position up front, plays all three positions up at forward, and it's really been a nice addition to this club, you know. The Oilers were always kind of known as a small, fast team. Well, Henrik came in and added that kind of a physical power forward role to them. Him, Mitch Moraz, Travis Iwana coming back as well. The three of them have really sort of changed the complexion of this team.
You know, it's definitely a year later, but we remember a year ago what Tyler Bunns did for the Medicine Hat Tigers. He has been assigned by the Oilers today to the Oklahoma City Barons. I can only imagine how much he wishes he was still playing for the Tigers and in the playoffs.
Yeah, I would think so, but you know, it's obviously the next step for a guy like that to get to the American Hockey League and start getting the test of pro. But yeah, you know, I think he obviously had a chance here, but you know, that Moose Jaw team is pretty good, and obviously, you know, getting by Medicine Hat four straight, I think is no small feat whatsoever. I know Edom missed a game there with a suspension, well, pretty much two, because he got taken out so early in the hockey game in game one and two, so that really hurt the Tigers. But yeah. It's too bad for Tyler Bunns. It would have been nice to see a chance to maybe see a series against him in Edmonton, just kind of to build that, build it up a little bit. But you know, obviously, he's on to bigger and better things, I guess.
Kamloops, Portland, Spokane, Tri-City, those are going long, and they're interesting series. Who do you see possibly coming out of the West?
I think that's a good question. You know, I think Portland's going to get through Kamloops here. I mean, it's 3-1 in Game 5 tonight. I think Portland's going to find a way to win that series, and they're obviously dangerous offensively. Spokane and Tri-City, though, I mean, Tri-City's been so good all year long, but you throw in that rivalry against the Spokane Chiefs, and that's one of the bitter rivalries out west in the Western Hockey League. So, you know, I think that's going to probably go the distance between those two clubs, and obviously whoever would match up against Portland, I mean, Tri-Portland or even Spokane-Portland, I think would be a fantastic Western final. But I'm starting to think, unless Tri-City gets through Spokane without a lot of injuries, it's probably going to be Portland, just the way they're firing right now. And offensively, I know they've had a few guys banged up, but you look at the guys that put the puck in the net for that club, and you know, a lot of guys at the end of their Western League careers, too, that want to kind of go out with a bang.
If you look at the top scorers in the Western League, you see a lot of Portland Winterhawks. They are ridiculously talented.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the one crummy thing about the Western League, you only get to see them once during the year, and obviously, they played Edmonton early in the season. The Oil Kings beat them 8-4, but Sven Berti wasn't in the lineup. And, of course, we all saw what he did with the Calgary Flames, so we know what he can do in the Western League level. So if that were to be the matchup, Alan, I think it would be a fantastic series. Lots of offense. Actually, hey, even if it's Moose Jaw Portland, whoever it is playing the Portland Winterhawks in the final, if that's what were to happen, it would be it'd be interesting to watch the different styles, the wide-open Portland style against kind of the more defensive styles of the Eastern Conference.
So before we let you go, I'd like to get your input on the NHL playoffs. They've been wild and crazy so far. What playoffs have you seen, and who has impressed you?
Well, I guess I didn't see a lot early, obviously, with being on the road. But, you know, the way the LA Kings have shut down the Canucks, I think, has been surprising. I watched that Pittsburgh-Philly game last night, and I don't know what Philly's got going for them right now, but they're finding ways. But something tells me that series isn't over either. Everybody's kind of going back to Boston last year, losing the first two in a row. And, you know, you look at the firepower the Penguins have, and they can never figure out how to close the door a little bit. I still think they're dangerous, but it's been a wild start so far. And, you know, obviously the first round of the NHL playoffs is always the best time of the year. It's just too bad the snow keeps coming down here in Edmonton. But other than that, it's always a lot of fun to hunker down and watch some hockey, that's for sure.
Corey, thanks so much for this. Appreciate it. And we'll look forward to your call on Friday night.
Absolutely. Anytime, Alan.
All right. That's Corey Graham, Edmonton Oil Kings play-by-play man. And, of course, you can join him right here on Team 1260, starting on Friday for the semifinals against Moose Jaw and the Edmonton Oil Kings. It's been such an interesting process to watch from their first year and then the build. And everybody agrees that they're about a year ahead of schedule, but that's okay. It looks like they're going to be a dominant force in the Western Hockey League here over this year and into next year, where things might even be better for them. So, wow. And Corey, of course, working a little overtime with this postseason, but I know he's delighted to do it. Now, coming up, we're going to have an interview Jason Greger did with Kevin Lowe. It's kind of a bookend of the one that we played last hour. Steve Tambellini talking about the postseason and what the plans are for the Edmonton Oilers' first overall pick, obviously, whether or not they would trade that pick, but some other elements as well. And Jason had a great conversation with Kevin Lowe. We'll replay that for you as well, and a few other things on the way. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:40, 2 o'clock, and Jim Hunter joining you right now, or in 20 minutes with the Jungle Jim Hunter Show. Right now, we're going to talk to Jason Greger. I had a conversation with Kevin Lowe yesterday, and I think it really points out the fact that the Edmonton Oilers are headed in a certain direction. The first overall pick was an interesting bonus for them. Now what to do with it? I mean, it could be an embarrassment of riches via trade. I've heard P.K. Subban being mentioned like every second time. What an addition he might be. But now Yakupov is also an outstanding young player and could be the perfect item to pass along to Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Could be watching those guys for the next decade or more. So it was a great conversation, and we wanted to pass along. This is Jason talking to Kevin Lowe.
Kevin, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Jason. Thank you. I want to start by saying I cannot believe you tweeted last night that you were watching the provincial debate when the Stanley Cup playoffs were on.
Well, you know what? Because at sometimes I need to take a kind of an onus on what's going on in the real world, this little sandbox of fun that I play in every night. But I'll be honest. I thought hockey guys would never answer a question. Wow, I have way more respect. I don't think any of those people on the panel last night barely answered a question. It was just infuriating for me after a while. I had to change the channel.
I get that. And believe me, I have to take a peek outside of the curtains once in a while in my life and see what's going on. It's not all hockey, but don't you tape it and then watch it later on in the evening or the next day?
Well, I PVR'd the playoff games.
Okay.
Yeah, right. See, I got a whole new system in my new house, so I've been trying to see if I could figure it out. And I'll say one thing, the new PVR, I got it on two TVs. I was PVRing both games, so it's unreal now. Oh.
Yeah, it is pretty good. There's lots of hockey. You can go to bed and not look at the scores and wake up early the next morning and watch them all.
Which is what I did because I was too tired. I PBR'd the overtime and watched it this morning of Chicago and Phoenix.
Same here.
Nice.
Same here.
Let's talk first of all about the World Championships for you overseeing this. Now, you're the GM, but I think you've got, what, five assistant GMs? Right, with Chiarelli and Holland and everybody else?
Yes, yeah, it's a good setup, and I... Steve Yzerman wanted the Olympic management team and the guys that are going to be in charge of picking the 2014 Olympic team to be part of the process. So okay. Steve, led by Steve, and Kenny Holland and Doug Armstrong and myself. And then Peter Chiarelli and Dave Nonis are also assisting us in these worlds. But he wanted that group collectively to be involved in this year's worlds and next year's worlds. So it's great stuff. In terms of helping out with my day job with the Oilers, to be able to talk to those guys about players and their thoughts on them, I mean, it's invaluable stuff. And it makes the selection process that much easier for these worlds.
So can you give us a quick example? Because a lot of us think, okay, you go down the list. Oh, geez, there's that 60-goal scorer kid, Steven Stamkos. I'm pretty sure we want him on it. Do you kind of go top to bottom? And how much conversation goes on between you and the guys? Or does everybody kind of submit a list of which 12 or 13 forwards and 6 or 7 defense when they'd like to start?
Yeah, pretty much... as you first started to describe it, I mean, you start with the top guys and you go, it'd be nice to have Stamkos, it'd be nice to have Tavares, and throw in a Getzlaff and a Perry, and it doesn't always work out that way every year, but this year we were quite fortunate. Steven Stamkos has a bit of a shoulder injury, so he's not accepted the invitation, understood. And a couple other top-end guys, Eric Staal and Rick Nash, they've been a bunch of times, still disappointed that they're not going, but the fact that they had committed to Team Canada and we do know them as players makes it a little more palatable them not coming. And you don't really know. There could be personal reasons as well. But in terms of it's really as simple as look at all the top Canadian players that aren't involved in the playoffs and put them on a big list and put them in categories of positions and top to bottom. We break them up in terms of A players, B players, and C players and have it all color-coded and you know, the lists are shared amongst everybody, and the Hockey Canada people do a good job of keeping us updated. And then when we started about a month ago, we just had weekly calls, and then a couple weeks ago, they're daily calls, basically.
Kevin Lowe joins us. Kevin, three orders are going there, Eberle, Dubnyk, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Eberle was a no-brainer. Dubnyk's really played well since January 1st, and Nugent-Hopkins coming off that injury. I know you're a huge fan of having players go over to play in the Worlds. It's a good experience. It also has them playing hockey into May, and so maybe they get in a mindset that their body can handle playing hockey for an extra month or 6 weeks or what have you. Was there any hesitation with Nugent-Hopkins about possibly just allowing him to rest?
Yes, there was, and in fact, I heard your show one day, and I thought it was really a bright comment that you made, that maybe the Oilers are better off not having Hopkins go. So there was, it wasn't an easy decision, but we relied on our doctors and TD Force, our therapist, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins himself for how he felt. And we actually talked to his agent as well, because he's been around him for a few years and knows him well. And at the end of the day, with the time off, his shoulder finished strong. He had a little bit of an AC separation, which is pretty common in all players. It's not the kind of shoulder problems that Alex Hemsky's had and Sean Horakoff and guys like that. I really don't think there's any hockey player in the NHL that doesn't have some sort of AC separation. So with the amount of time between now and the start of the tournament, and then when the tournament does finish the 20th of May, there's still lots of time for Ryan to have some time off and then get into a strong strengthening program for the summer so that he's ready for next year. So when we looked at all that and weighed it out and factored in the kind of experience he's going to get, and this is an audition for him potentially for 2014. We just felt that it was the right thing to do for him.
Some of those general managers don't have any players that are available because their teams are in the playoffs, Kevin. If we go back to the Canada Cup days, it seemed that whichever GM was kind of running that team, he would like to get some of his guys on there. Was that your thought process with a guy like Devan Dubnyk? I know the other guys still had to approve of it, and I know they're fans of him, but were you kind of pushing for it just because you want to see if he can continue on his development?
Actually, the interesting thing about the group that we have is that we all collectively seem to go the other way. And in other words, we're less likely to push our guys and wait for the other guys to sort of bring them up and talk about them. I mean, Jordan Eberle is a slam dunk. But in terms of the other two, Devan and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, it was really interesting to hear the assessments. And that makes you feel good and feel proud of your guys, that there's strong support for those guys to go there. In Devan's case, his play down the stretch, and he's just, he's consistently got better every year. And of course, this year, playing more, he got better as the season went along, and it was really nice to hear the guys to talk about him and in terms of a guy that we really have to have, and not just sort of a late addition, and thought that he was a great a great package with Cam Ward. And then in Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' case, just the whole group is collectively intrigued by who he is and really thinking that he does have a shot for 2014 and wanting to see him on the big ice and play at a high level.
Kevin Lowe, president of hockey operations for the Edmonton Oilers, GM for the upcoming World Championships. Kevin, with the Olympics now only 2 years away, and it looks like, you know, although I know it's not official, but we'd all assume that the NHL players are going to be there. Have you noticed a change of a mindset where more young guys are, and maybe even middle-aged guys, are really willing to want to go there because they think they can be on the stage and have yourself and Steve Yzerman and Ken Holland and them watching them, and maybe that will help them for a potential Olympic spot?
I think it has helped, and that was a definitely a directive from Steve. You know, we want to, and Bob Nicholson for that matter. Of course, Bob was quite disappointed last year when Canada didn't do well, and there were a lot of guys that turned down the offer to go play, and it's tricky business. The players, rightfully so, recognize that they're paid by their respective teams and in terms of playing hockey, but there's an unwritten rule in hockey, and you're seeing it more and more now with the European players, you know, and even the U.S. are getting a better representation that this is all part of the package. You know, the NHL has a contract with Hockey Canada and with USA Hockey and with the IIHF so that the players do participate in these tournaments. It's all good for the game. From a player's perspective, I can't imagine not wanting to go. You want to play hockey at the highest level, and if your team's not in the playoffs, this is the highest level. But in terms of the players accepting this year for Canada, no question they're thinking about, you know, Sochi just less than a couple years away, and that that by being there, it might be it might be the one opportunity. We hope it might be the one opportunity for Eberle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Devan Dubnyk to play in front of that group on that scene, because we hope that the team's in the playoffs next year, and they might not get that opportunity.
Kevin, I want to talk a few other things hockey related. Corey Schneider came out and, you know what, no one cares about Edmonton, and you know, for me, I look at that and I say, well, obviously the Oilers haven't been at the top, and when you guys were winning and you were the championship team, I'm sure other fan bases and other teams, most people are jealous of the successful teams. And even though the Canucks have yet to win a cup, they've clearly been the most dominant team in the Northwest. But do you get a sense that when you look at Vancouver, not only are they good, they have a lot of guys that people hate to play against and fans hate watching. You look at that and say, man, we got to get a few of those guys in Edmonton sometime in the next few years?
To answer your question, Jason, you know, you're right in some respects. I guess the reason why Corey Schneider said what he said is that the Oilers haven't been successful. Maybe that's part of it. Quite frankly, I think that players responding to these types of things, it shows the fragility of a player. Possibly a player hasn't been around winning much and not much experience. I wouldn't get roped into those types of things. Your main focus should be, as a group, collectively staying together, keeping your focus in the dressing room, not worrying about the outside world too much and what's said, because really all that matters is your play on the ice. And I know it's a different game nowadays. There's more going on. The players are into the Twitter world and the social media world. But my response would be all the more reason that you got to stay a tight-knit group and not get into that stuff. Let that stuff swirl around you and keep your focus as a group and where it's most important on your coach's game plan and your own personal health and your own personal support of one another to keep everybody's confidence up and being ready to play.
And I think, and you know, going back to the successful factor, when you guys were winning, and you know, we were the dominant team for pretty much a decade, you know, obviously the Islanders right before you, and everybody is trying to kind of break that up. But I know Glenn Sather, and I've watched, you know, a lot of the old things on the Oilers, and they talked about that cohesiveness where you kind of accept people to not want to like you, and it's almost like a backhanded compliment when other fan bases or other teams don't necessarily like you, because that means you're a good team.
Hey, let's face it, the Canucks are a very good hockey team, and time will tell whether they win a Stanley Cup, but they're a very entertaining team. They're a very good team. For them to get their noses out of joint about what other people say does such a disservice to themselves. Just go prove it on the ice. Go win a championship. And And again, as I said earlier, it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you're going to be judged on the success that you have, and to go out and lose energy by focusing on that is not important. Really, it's destructive.
I have to ask you, Kevin, about your thoughts. Were you? I know you weren't at the lottery, but where were you when you watched it, and how surprised were you when Bill Daly called out the Edmonton Oilers and not the Columbus Blue Jackets?
I've been all three lotteries. I've been sitting in my office watching on TV, and in all three cases, when it came down to the last for Bill Daly to announce the first overall pick, my heart stopped in all three cases, as it did this time around. And I remember a couple days before, I looked on the NHL's website and reminded myself of the history of who won and who didn't win the lottery. And it was quite evident that, or quite obvious to me, that the 29th place team had never gone to pick one or never won the lottery. And I thought, well, the law of averages has got to happen. So when Bill Daly said the first overall pick, it just prior to that, him showing the Oilers a logo, I thought to myself, it's us.
Yeah.
And it felt really good. I know Oiler fans are excited, and they should be, because well, let's put it this way. The last time a team had three first-rounders and three first-overall picks, they went on to be a pretty darn good team for well over a decade. So let's hope that that'll be the case for us.
Yeah, and ironically enough, they traded away their last of three because Eric Lindros held out. Now, they've got a king's ransom for that trade of Eric Lindros back from Philadelphia. Realistically, I've said from the day I said, I don't see the Oilers trading this pick. Do you think realistically someone could give you an offer that would seriously make you think about it when you consider what the offers have been in previous years?
No, I don't. I really don't. But having said that, Jason, I do think that there's probably more appetite for teams that are, you know, in the say, I'm just throwing a number in the bottom eight that are all around there that might be intrigued by having the first overall pick, and not a specific player, I might add, but just. There definitely is a luxury in having the first overall draft pick, assuming he turns out to be a good player. You can market that a little bit. I mean, it doesn't carry on forever, but it certainly adds some spin in your marketplace. So there might be some motivation there, or an organization has a feel about a particular player that they really feel will be a difference maker, and they might want to move off. My sense is there might be a little more appetite for that this time around. But you know, we just really won the pick a few days ago, and it'll be weeks or months before any concrete offers, I suppose, will come to Steve Tambellini. But I would be shocked that anyone would step up and offer what we feel would be good enough to have us not take that player.
That's the money quote right there. Bottom line, they'd have to be overwhelmed. My thanks to our guests, Tom Lynn, Corey Graham, also Gabe Desjardins. We're out. See you next Saturday, Nation Radio.